So we're going to start going through the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is going to be now it'll start out more slowly. You know, there's a lot.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare Hare. Follow any time.
Sit up there and talk.
Are you sitting right here?
Yeah. Talk.
Devo, Jai. Apne naam kya hai?
Speak out there.
Mere naam.
Devo,
you want to find out, you can maybe, but just very light. Wait, maybe wait for 2 months.
Wait a while, Devo.
Maharaj, will you please sit on the couch so
yes.
The rest of you get comfortable?
So we can sit on the couch.
I said it for everybody else.
I thought he was going to laugh.
Conversation a while back, there was a reading, a few devotees were gathered, and we were reading from the Ramayana. And the discussion and the particular part we were reading dealt with the passing of Dasarath Maharaj and Bharat being out of station, so to speak. And so Ram and Lakshman were in the forest, Bharat and Shatrughna were gone, so they had to wait till Bharat and Shatrughna returned to do the funeral ceremony. So it mentioned how they soaked Dasarath's body in oil. And of course, just because of the nature of what I do, it prompted so many questions. And you may or may not know them, but I know you know a lot about these different types of puja-related things and samskars. And really, a couple of things came to my mind philosophically and practically. One was, our Vedic standard is that when the body dies, within 24 hours it should be burned. 24.
It has to be, it means it has to be before the sundown.
Right, before the sundown that day, right.
So if it's at night, then it'll be before sundown the
next
day.
So my understanding is that has to do with the soul's connection to the body and the allowing of the soul to move on. So obviously Dasarath Maharaj is a great personality. So by not burning the body in that time period, does the soaking in oil, like, soul stays in limbo, or how?
No. I mean, the soaking in oil would be because the principle is the sun does the funeral rites.
Right.
Like that. And since sun is there and sun can be there, then they waited for him. So that's one aspect. Other aspect is because of the royal order, then therefore it should be done in a very, you know, proper way, very dignified way.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially the, you know, any kshatriya, it might be a different, but as the emperor, you know, then it's important because for you know, just the dignity of the order, people are it's important for the people to feel that proper respect that everything's done in a dignified way. You know, like you see in England now with the royalty, at least up to recently, then the people were very much, you know, impressed and pleased with the royalty. They like them to be there. So the queen mother, the queen, always does everything right, but then they became not so impressed with how the youngsters were dealing. And so then the ratings of the royalty kind of goes down.
Even in the recent assassination in Afghanistan, one of the three vice presidents, they did a big state funeral. You know,
mm-hmm.
Most of that was for public.
Yeah, it means it's important. It means like that, because the people have to feel, if their identity is going to be strong with the country, have to feel that their leaders are something special also. You know, because if it's just done without much dignity, then there's nothing special about the leaders, and nothing special about the leaders, there's nothing really special about the country. You know, so means there's the technicalities support the relationships in the whole, you know, the whole system, the whole social system. So that's important, is that you have to balance both with the technical rules, but the technical rules are there to support the relate the rasa, you know, what's the mood. Because in the spiritual world you don't have to have rules, because there's the spontaneous proper performance of duties out that don't cross the line of rasa bhas, you know, like that. So the eternal associates know this. So the others then are trained in this. Right? Means the those who are internal shakti, they'll always do it properly. So the jivas have to be trained in it, because they're not internal potency. Right? They're tathastas, so they have to be trained in what's the attitude of the internal potency. Like that's their position. So then they're trained. The others don't have to be trained. Like that. In pastime, then they do these things. They'll lead to mate, instruct Radharani, and things like that. But that's just to enhance the rasa at that moment. You know, what would be best to bring out, what would be Krishna's pleasure. But for the jivas, they do have to be trained. Like that subtlety, but it has to be trained. So in the material world, since people don't know what they should do and not do, especially since the jiva here could take any of 8,400,000 mentalities, like that. So they need to be trained how to do that, you know, like that. So then for the human being, then the rules and regulations are there. But the rules are for the purpose of interaction, for rasa. They're not there for something other than that. So the rule then has to match the application. So if the application isn't in line with what should be the attitude in that situation, no one's pleased, even though the ritual has been done properly. Therefore, niyamagraha. So someone thinks, I've done the ritual, therefore everything's fine. No, they've made a mistake. Or the other person doesn't understand the ritual or has seen people doing rituals and it didn't make a nice atmosphere. So they throw them out. That's also niyamagraha. So both these. Because what's happening is one's not understanding the tattva. I mean, understanding really what's the application of the tattva and the rasa. So one is more pious and one is not necessarily, you know, but both are a mistake. Mm-hmm. Because the purpose of it is to create the proper environment in which Krishna consciousness can be affected, like that. Because that's the actual purpose of the universe, is to make people Krishna conscious. But as living beings, then there also has to be interaction. There must be social interaction. So the social interaction shouldn't go against the principles that will elevate it to God consciousness. So it's complex, because the living entity is complex.
Yeah. How do we understand this from the spiritual principle, the soul's connection to the body and prolonging the burning of the body, and what that does or how that impacts?
Well, it's also you're dealing with someone who's more noble. So the Kshatriyas are also known as Rishis. So when you say the royal sages, it means the kings. And when you just say the sages, it means the Brahmins. So they're also, basically, they're Brahmins, but there's more passion. So the Brahmins know the knowledge, teach the knowledge, but the Kshatriyas are willing to do that. Because they're doing it, they get caught up in it. So they still need the Brahmins to give direction so that they don't, you know, what is it? You can't see the forest for the trees. So the Kshatriya can get into that. He's so absorbed in this one particular aspect that he doesn't see necessarily a broader picture. So the Brahmins then point out that the Shastra mentions these other. Then he pulls back, looks at it, and makes his decision. But he's still the active principle. He's making the decision. The Brahmins aren't making the decision. They give advice like that. So they're basically as good as. You see, is that before they're installed in the throne, they live as brahmacharis and all that, and the same training is exactly the same as the Brahmins. Then, after marriage, they get trained in the details of the kingdom and the practical. You know, they live in the kingdom, they're trained by the Rajguru, they're trained by the ministers, they're trained by the generals, like that. Then when they're ready, then they're installed on the throne. But then after, when their son is ready and he's installed, then they leave and go to the forest, like the Brahmins. So except for that period of the grihastha life, the rest of their life is lived as a Brahmin, like that. And also, even the Vaishyas, you know, that will be a principle. But it's especially seen in the Kshatriyas. So these kind of things wouldn't be a problem for such a person.
In the line of Gaudiya Vaishnava, from Lord Chaitanya and Goswamis, and our goal is Radha and Krishna.
Yeah.
How could you keep them balanced when devotees worship Lord Nrisimhadev?
I see. Okay. See, Nrisimhadev is a special deity. He's not like the other Vaikuntha Murtis. Means those who are worshippers of Vaikuntha see him in that light, but they also see Radha and Krishna in that light. Mm-hmm. They see that Narayan has taken the form as Radha and Krishna, because Kiradakshay Vishnu, he expands as all the avatars. So that's how those who are, you know, worshippers, their goal is Vaikuntha, that's how they'll see Radha and Krishna and Nrisimha like this. They only see up to the platform of Vaikuntha. They don't see beyond. Vrindavan is a manifestation of Vaikuntha. It's all like that, which in one sense is not wrong, because the whole spiritual world is called Vaikuntha, because there's no Kunta, there's no distress. But at the same time, the awe and reverence and the opulence is the focus for them. So In Goloka, then the full manifestation of Godhead, then you see is Krishna, is Baladev, is Nrisimha, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Ramachandra. These are Swayam, means all the 64 qualities that are listed that Krishna has, they have those. All other expansions don't, they have 60 qualities, like that. And depending upon the manifestation, then there's that means in the Vaikuntha it'll be the 60, and in the material world then the 60 will be there. It means the Purusha avatars, but it'll be a little less. Like that. 55 will be full, but 5 will be a touch less. Like that. So then Nrisimhadev is the deity of Nanda Maharaj. He actually is, it's a very mysterious kind of, he's involved in the whole thing. He is the protector of bhakti. So then if there's something that's against bhakti, it means aparadha, means radha means worship, so aparadha means against the mood of Radharani. Means because Radha means all other Lakshmis are expanding from her. All services, she's the devotee. There's only one devotee, it's her. Everybody else is her assistant, devotee of the devotee. So it's against her mood. So Nrisimhadev is there to remove that from the heart of the devotee. Therefore he's called Bhaktivatsala. So for us, then there's not a problem. It's Krishna taking that form to help us remove the anarthas from our heart, like that. So the worship it's not the same as worshipping Vishnu. It means you're worshipping Krishna in this form. Therefore, we even see the other avatars in that way, but him especially. Like you'll see the Gaudiyas, they all worship Nrisimhadev, but they don't worship the other Vishnumurtis. You know, they don't have Varaha deities, rather Nrisimha only. You see, that's a uniqueness there because of his position in removing the obstacles in devotional service, like that. So like that. Because in attraction, there's, technically speaking, then there's four, means you have sambandha abhideya prayojana, right? So sambandha has two parts. What is the actual situation, you know, of the different elements that you're dealing with in their relationship, then what is the attraction between them? You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So there's two aspects there. So that's why Madan Mohan is in Sambandha, because he attracts like that. So then, but at the same time as in Sambandha, you have to establish what are the standards, and you have to establish what are the relationships, the technical relationships and all those kind of things. They have to be established. So therefore, in other words, you have to remove what's going to create, in other words, you have yama and niyama, what has to be given up and what has to be done, right? when that's there, then attraction can happen. So without Nisringadev's influence, you can't remove those things that are going to that get in the way of your attraction to Krishna. Madan Mohan, you can't be attracted to Madan Mohan if you're attracted to the material energy, like that. So he removes that obstacle, and then you can get attracted. So therefore, the work of Madan Mohan and the work of Nisringadev is the same, just two different aspects of the same thing. You know, the two parts of Sambandha. So it's just like in Vishnumurtis, then Shankarshan, he establishes religious principles. Prajumna attracts us, right? He's Cupid. He attracts us like that. Then the Aniruddha, he is the like the example, you know, Prayojan of what's the proper. And Vasudeva is the pastime, so the Avideya. Like that. So you see there's two aspects of Sambandha there. Like that. So you see they expand from Shankarshan. Vasudeva is separate. But from Shankarshan then Prajumna comes, then Prajumna is Aniruddha. So you see. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
Like that. So he's in a special position. But what you have to understand is in worshipping him that is Keshava that's coming this way. Otherwise we see it's just Vaikunthamurti, then it's not exactly our line like that. But if we see as Krishna's come in this way to remove the obstacles so I can properly worship Radha and Krishna, then that's our view. Does that make some sense?
And is necessarily to worship Nisringadev or just...
It's part. It's our line. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur at the Yogpeet established the deity of Lakshmi Nisringa. And Prabhupada had us after every artik sing. Whether you have a deity or not, it's not important, but he's the one who protects the Sankirtan mission. So those that would be obstacles, he's the one that's removing them. You know, it means we turn to Krishna, but Krishna in the form of Nisringa will remove them. Like that. That's just like to catch Prahlad when he's thrown off the mountain. Because then Nisringadev took the form of Varaha to catch him. So whatever is the practical form for that particular service. So Hiranyakashipu, you know, he's very much into, you know, money is power, right? So that's control. And Kashipu is soft bed, is enjoyment. So this envy and attachment, these are the root principles of being in the material world. So Nisringadev is the most expert at removing that. From that, when that's removed, then the service attitude can then manifest within the heart, like that. You know, so that's why it's important. That's why he's involved in our process, like that. So he's mentioned also, I think Laghu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami, because it's like an outline or synopsis of the Bhagavatam, essential points. So one of the points is there. Is he's giving Nisringadev as Swayam Murti, like that. Because he could play the flute, but he doesn't. You know, like that. I guess nails would be a problem.
You mentioned that Nanda Maharaj worships Nisringa. What form of Nisringa does he worship, do we know?
I'm not sure. Have you seen it close? I don't know if it's a Lakshmi Nisringa or if it's... I think it's...
The reason I ask is you're indicating in this conversation how important Nisringadev is there for removing both the external obstacles to the Sankirtan movement and for removing the
internal
obstacles within our heart.
Yeah.
But yet there's very serious restriction on who worships what form of Nisringadev.
Yeah. Well, Ugra is not worshipped by Grihasthas generally because Lakshmi is not with them. Lakshmi is not performing service. So the principle is Krishna comes to the world as a grihastha, and then all the grihasthas take part in serving him.
Mm.
Like that. So, because Lakshmi is there, and the grihastha has his wife, then it works nicely. But if he doesn't have his wife, then it's not appreciated that someone else is worshipping who does have one.
Mm-hmm.
Because his wife can't figure out how to do service, so how is your wife going to figure it out? You know, like that. So that's the principle, like that. Because in that mood, then it's a brahmachari mood, so they can approach.
Right.
Because, so, that's why Ugra is not worshipped by grihastha. Not so, because it's technical, because Lakshmi is not there. As soon as then Lakshmi, he's calmed down, Lakshmi comes and sits on his lap, then it's open. All the demigods come forward, everybody, everything happens like that. So, therefore, then through Pallad we approach him. So there, the brahmacharis, the sannyasis, then will worship. That's it's just like when you do a yajna. Then there on the front, there's that you have to put the triangle, the yoni peak, because you're approaching the fire or Vishnu through Lakshmi. So a brahmachari can make a pit without that, because he doesn't have a wife. But a grihastha can't worship him. Vishnu won't accept it unless you go through as his wife. You have your wife, so why you're not acknowledging mine?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the principle of it. You know, it's that makes sense.
Yeah. On that subject of worshipping the deity, there's discussion sometimes of the difference between installed and uninstalled deities, and installed and uninstalled in the home or in the temple. And there, from the different discussions I've been involved in, there seems to be no clear siddhanta or understanding on it that's been given. I wondered if you have any, can shed any light on this subject matter, because most householders don't have installed deities per se. They haven't done pranapratishtha. Yet, in some temples, we see that the deity being worshipped has not received pranapratishtha. So, you know, is there really a difference? Does it really matter?
Technically, there's some discussion in Archon magazine. There's
right.
an article on that.
Right.
So, the principle is there's no such thing as an uninstalled deity that's being worshipped. It's either the deity or it's not, you know. So if you're worshipping and the deity is accepting your worship, that means he's present. So if he's present, then he has standards. So the tradition is there's permanently installed and temporarily installed deities. You don't have installed and uninstalled. This term has just come up, I think, just because of not knowing the technical words. But it's permanently installed, temporarily installed. So permanently installed means you always have to worship on a daily basis. Temporarily installed means they're worshipped during a certain period. So those deities, it's not necessary that the pranapratishtha is done. But when they are being worshipped, then the proper standards must be followed. Like that, just like Prabhupada had a pair of gorni tai deities in his room. They stayed in a trunk like that. And then they would come out for big festivals. So when we went to Kumbh Mela and other big festivals, they come. But when they come out, then they're properly worshipped. You know, whatever standard you set, 7 artiks a day or 3 artiks or 1 or whatever it is, but then that has to be done. And all the standards are there. And then when the festival's over, then they go back to sleep in the box. You know, or sometimes you have festival deities, like come out, Jagannath just comes out just for Rath Yatra, or just comes out for, or little deities come out, let's say for swing festival only, or for the festival, you know, sitting in the water, or like that. So in Mayapur, there's 3 sets of deities. There's the big ones, the small Radhamata, and then there's very little Radhamata that come out for the elephant procession, they come out for you know, certain things like that. And the rest of the time, they sleep. But when they're out, they're dealt with as an installed deity.
Mm.
So the pranapratishtha isn't done on those, because pranapratishtha means you're going to do the worship every day. Like that. That's the thing. But then generally, if they're not being worshipped, they're asleep. That would be the traditional way of applying it. It wouldn't be that all worship, you know, every Thursday, and so the rest of the days they sit there. They would be asleep those days that day they come. That would traditionally be how it's done.
So then we're
quite expert at developing, you know, our own traditions.
does the idea of householders having deities in their home, for instance, that are not daily worship, but maybe weekly or codicilly? Bi-monthly. How does that fall into the description you're giving? They're not being put to sleep the rest of the time. They're there.
That's the problem, is we're very expert at doing things that don't fit tradition.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difficulty.
I see.
I mean, it's our difficulty across the board.
Uh-huh.
So the deities suffer, we suffer socially, we suffer administratively, we suffer in so many ways because because of these kind of things, we don't like to follow tradition. You know? Because the point is why the deities are there. We're there because they're supposed to inspire us. Mm-hmm. But that's one thing. Or we like doing it. It's generally the answer you get. I like doing it. But the thing is we like doing it, but a relationship should be mutual. We should like doing it, and Krishna should like that interaction. But if only we like it, he doesn't like it, then it's not so great, you know, like that. So those considerations should be there. There's the element of the devotion and this and that, but there's also the element of how you're going to show that devotion. And like Prabhupada mentioned about the kitchen, if it's not, you don't maintain the standards of not mixing bhoga and prasad, then how do you show that you actually have love for Krishna? Because Krishna doesn't like the mix. He doesn't want to eat something that's touched something he's already eaten. You know, like you wouldn't appreciate getting served, a fresh meal on yesterday's plate that wasn't washed. You know, it just would not be appetizing. You know, like that. Or, you know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is just that the rules are there because the rules are how Krishna likes it. You know, Krishna likes it that way. So that's why the rule is there. We don't know how Krishna likes it. So if we love Krishna, then we'll show it. You know, just like if you say you have affection for somebody and you don't do anything to show that, they won't take it so seriously. You know?
Should it be understood? No, I'm sorry, I don't want to hog it.
I was in that regard. I was just listening to a tape of Srila Prabhupada.
Oh, okay.
Prabhupada was talking about, some of the householders are now purchasing murtis in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada was saying, there was some discussion, and he was saying, well, that is all right, but better if they're going to neglect that they don't have. He was saying,
yeah.
It shouldn't be neglect.
Yeah, it shouldn't be neglect, so they should be kept clean in that. See, the deity, the Archimurti, the thing he likes the best is the bath. And somehow or another, that's the one thing that I've noticed that the householders don't want to do. But the purpose of the Murti coming in that form is his favorite of the 16 items is the bath. You know, like that. Unless the deities are like neem or something like that, but then still they're wiped off, you know, like that. So the bath is the part he likes the best. Like the yantra likes the mudras the best. You know, the different deities have different elements that they like the best. Like that, it's mentioned in the 11th canto, like that, in the process of deity worship. Just which deities like which of the items, the aspects of the deity worship the best. So, but somehow or another, I've found that's the one thing that no one likes to do. So, therefore, too much detail in this area, I don't know how to answer, because to me it doesn't make any sense.
Uh-huh.
Like that. So, and that's it. But Janani Vas, I think, is a little bit, you know, more experienced in these kind of things. You know, because to me it doesn't take much to do like that. You know, it's like if one does it 20 minutes, you could bathe the deity, dress them, do the whole thing like that. And then once a week or every 2 weeks, then polish them and like that. That, okay, that's extra. But to me it doesn't make so much sense, you know, so like that. But at least the
Jayasek, more expert, more.
Janayavas, he has more experience in dealing with advising grihasthas how to worship in the house. My main field is the standards of deity worship in, you know, from the Shastric angle, or temple worship, those kind of things, festivals. That's more my experience. I haven't had as much experience advising home worship like that. It's not my strong point.
Maharaj, regarding Lord Nitai, that's correct that Lord Nityananda wore the peacock feather? So many issues.
It's see that somehow or another the peacock feather has become a big, you know, point of contention. It's probably one of the least important issues of deity worship that I could even think of. Because the principle is the cowherd boys go out into the field, whatever is out there, they pick up and they wear. The cows wear peacock feathers.
So what's the big deal?
The peacocks wear peacock feathers. The cowherd boys, they pick them up, they wear them. They're just something, that, if you, like in certain seasons, the floor of Vrindavan is just covered with peacock feathers, because all the peacocks drop all their feathers. You know, so during Kartik, somehow or another, you're very shy, they're very embarrassed because they don't have any feathers, you know, like that. They stay very much out of the way. So they're just laying around. So then the boys will pick them up, they'll play with them, they'll wear them. It's not an important issue. Lord Chaitanya is wearing them because Krishna wears the peacock feather because Radharani, one time he was with Kalindi, and then Radharani was coming, so Kalindi turned into the river and Krishna turned into a black snake, and then Radharani took the form of a peacock, and then the peacocks, they can catch snakes, mm-hmm. like that. So she did that and caught Krishna. So then Krishna, then to acknowledge that, then he would always wear a peacock feather. But so many times Radharani, she wears them also, you know, because they're village. So they wear, like you'll see with the Goswami deities. If you look at practically all the pictures of the Jaipur Govindaji or Madan Mohan or Gopinath, practically all of them you'll see Radharani's wearing peacock feathers. Occasionally there's one where she's not. So for us, we generally do it the other way around. Occasionally you can put peacock feathers on Radharani. We don't do it as a daily thing, though they generally do it as a daily thing. That. So
I heard one phrase: anybody can, but Krishna must.
Yeah, like that. That's the thing. So it's not that they have to or not, but so this thing that either they both don't wear or only Chaitanya wears, or there's no rules like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Krishna wears. So if you're looking at the point that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, then from that aspect he's wearing, because he is Krishna. The same time as Radharani, because so many times Radharani dresses up as Krishna. There's no problem. Also, there's the element, if we get into rasa, that there's nothing that enhances a girl's remembrance of the boy than wearing something of his. So this idea of Lord Chaitanya wearing the peacock feather takes him out of his mood. As far as I understand the rasa between boy and girl, it doesn't make any sense. You know, the girl's feeling cold, the boy gives her his coat. She'll feel that she's, you know, being covered by that boy. These are subtle sensitivities of the conjugal ras. Well, to me it doesn't make any sense that it's going to disturb Lord Chaitanya's mood, you know, at all. It doesn't make even the slightest bit of sense. Saying that what's happened is explained, why does he wear the peacock feather? It's been said because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then if that's the reason, that would disturb the mood. But that's not the reason that the girl wears. It's a different aspect. You know, it's like, let's say the husband, the girl, you know, probably is thinking of the high court judge, right? I mean, in the home, he's not the high court judge. He's the husband. In the court, he is. So even if he's out and the wife puts on the husband's, you know, robe for some reason, it's not because he's the high court judge, it's my husband. So it will still evoke that mood. You're only going to evoke that from, the women are only going to evoke that. So it's an absolutely unimportant, you know, point. It's that peacock feathers are a great decoration, they make very nice things, so if you put them on and they look nice, why not? You know? It means, when we understand Nisringadeva, Keshava Drita Narahari Rupa, so therefore we don't see any problems with him wearing them either. Mm-hmm. Because he's Keshava in this form. Just we are not of the level to bring that out of him. Means if Nisringadeva stood in front of all the other Brajavasis, then he would stay there as Nisringadeva. But if Radharani stood in front of him, he'd turn into Krishna. He can't maintain. You know, it's that pastime when the gopis were asked, they came by and saw for our Vishnu, they asked him, which way did Krishna go? You know, like that. So then he pointed some way, who knows? Whatever. And then they went on. But when Radharani came, he couldn't maintain it. He would go in and out of his two-armed and four-armed form. Because the principle of rasa is you have ashraya and vishaya. You know, the vishaya, the enjoyer, or and then you have the ashraya, who's the shelter of that relationship. So the ashraya draws the relationship from the vishaya. Because Krishna isn't in a rasa. Sometimes we think Krishna is in this rasa or that. He's not in a rasa. He is rasa. Like that. It means that's what he's made of. He's made of rasa. So he's the unlimited ocean of rasa, or the reservoir of rasa, or reservoir of pleasure. Like that. So then if you put Radharani in front of him, it draws him the conjugal rasa. You put from him in front of Mother Yashoda, it draws from him the parental rasa. You put from Subala, it draws the friendship rasa. Like that. So whoever you put there, it draws from him. So we see that, we can draw like that. You can speak to Nisringadeva as Krishna. It's just in that form. Like that. He's taken that form too for that particular service of removing those anartas and that protection. But it's the same Krishna. Therefore Radharani on the battlefield of Kurukshetra doesn't see another Krishna. She sees this is the same Krishna. No, I'm just saying Radharani. But the environment and what it is, therefore I can't draw that out of him. Because it will be unbecoming in this, but it'll be Rasabhas. Therefore, even sees generally in Vrindavan, their sambhog is sambhog and their vipalamba is vipalamba. But in this situation, it's like Prema Sarovar is considered very elevated because even though Radha and Krishna are together, they're feeling separation. Right? So it's very special in that way. So therefore we see as Kurukshetra is very special in that way because Radha and Krishna are together, but at the same time they're feeling separation. Therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that this is even higher than the Vrindavan rasa. Because in Vrindavan they can't get that. When they're together, they're together. But here they're together and they're not. You get a touch of that. Krishna's in Mother Yashoda's house, he's eating Radharani's behind the curtain. You know, some things like that, they're seeing off Krishna. They can't fully manifest. But they can manifest some degree. She can look at him, she can do this. She can't do any of that there. He's surrounded by all his queens. Queens will pick up on him. They know who's looking at who. Right? So therefore, nothing can be manifest. So that was like that manifestation of Ratha Yatra, is that whole thing bringing him, and then the prayer is that. And then Rupa Goswami caught that. So then Lord Chaitanya is asking, how did he catch this? This is his topmost ecstasy. You know, and how did he catch that? Therefore, Rupa was very special. So Purushottam Kshetra Puri is that Kurukshetra. So Purushottam is Dwarka, but it's Dwarka in that mood of what's happening at Kurukshetra. So therefore, that's why it's the perfect place for Lord Chaitanya to go. He didn't go to Dwarka. He went there. So it's Dwarka, but it's not Dwarka. You know, it's Dwarka, but it's that mood of Vrindavan is there. So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur spent his last days there, rather than in Vrindavan and Navadvipa. So it's very... Does that make sense?
Yeah. The last last question. Some devotees worship Govardhan Shiva, but also at the same time is praise to Rishi Shukta. That's also a love pass?
No, see, if you have Shaligram, then you will worship Shaligram with the 16 items and with Rishi Shukta and all that. Then Giriraj, you only have to just basically deal with bathing him and giving offering those five items. You know, nice scents, nice food, nice ornaments, nice flowers, like this. But if you don't have Shaligram and your Shila is Govardhan, then you would do the 16 items to him in that way. That's the way it would be done, like that. Because 16 items is what is to be offered. Worship is 16 items, like that. So that's just the method, like that. So if one wants to separate those, he would have a Shaligram, he would have his Giriraj, so he'd worship the Shaligram according to that way, and then Giriraj, he would just, you know, simple bathe and draw his nice face and put all these other things like that. So it depends upon, this was mentioned by Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj. He made this distinction.
Do I understand you to say that if you're worshipping Shaligram Shiva with the full 16 items,
yeah,
that, for instance, Padma Margamachmi would not be necessary for Govardhan?
No.
could do, but not necessary.
You could do, but it wouldn't be necessary.
Ah.
Like that. You could just bathe them, dress them. It's just like the big deities. You don't do all that on the big deities.
Right.
Because you do through the Shaligram.
Right. You were mentioning also Rasabhasa, and there's this very well-known quote that Srila Prabhupada gave about worshipping a Sringadeva in a separate temple, separate day.
Yeah.
Does that refer to Ugrinashringa or to also Lakshminashringa?
Well, it is a different mood. That's the thing. It means you're Radha and Krishna, there's that the aspect of sweetness.
Mm.
While with Nrisimhadev, even though he is still that same Krishna, the mood is that of the Lord. So it's a different environment. So Lord Chaitanya can mix in that environment like that, but Nityananda also, at least they have to have a separate altar. Like that, but the environment's the same because they're worshipping in this way, you know. So it's manifest, same mood, but unmanifest means Nrisimhadeva is also worshipping Radha Krishna, but it's not manifest, so it'll have a slightly different flavor. So that's why it's recommended the temple. It can have the same kirtan hall, it's just he has his own place where he can create his own environment,
mm-hmm.
like that. Then it matches because he'll have his associates, his everything like that. So it matches. So the moods are important, but one has to see, you know, into the, how do you say, you can't, yeah. The externals of it, one has to be careful to follow, but at the same time as they're based on what is the mood, you know, so one has to match the two.
Could you speak a little bit about worship of Gorga Dadhar that Prabhupada didn't seem to talk much about this?
It's because we have Radha and Krishna. See, Gorga Dadhar, then Gadadhar is not manifesting. Gorga Dadhar doesn't interact with Lord Chaitanya as Radharani. She is Radharani, but Lord Chaitanya, he's taking the mood of Radharani. She's there because she can't be separated from Krishna and to support in the pastimes so that he can taste that. You know, so that's why it's not, we see, when we see Panchatattva, you know, Gorga Dadhar, means that we see Lord Chaitanya, we see Radha and Krishna. So Gorga Dadhar is also seen as Radha and Krishna. But the point is you're only going to get Gadadhar's mercy, or Radharani's mercy, once you've got Nittai's mercy. Without Nittai, you can't get. This is the song Narottam Das Thakur. Nittai, you know, what's it?
Karuna Habe.
No,
yeah.
No, it means Radha Krishna, Dina. Yeah, whatever, you know the line, whatever. So it's Radha Krishna Paitinaya. Yeah, so means because he removes the obstacles. You can't have love for Krishna if you have love for the material world. Like that. The Sahaji idea is I'll have that, but then I won't bother with this. But that's what makes the Gaudiyas unique is that there is a separation there, is that you can only fill a glass up with so much, you know. So if it's already half full of ink, you can fill it up half with milk, but it'll be black. So you have to get rid of the ink, wash it, then when it's clean, then put in the milk, then it's pure milk. Otherwise, you can put in unlimited milk, and it'll still be black. You can pour in gallons and gallons of milk, and it'll still be tinged with the ink.
Okay. There was a... Calcutta, when I was there, there was some woman, some ma, was it sannyasini or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she was professing Sahaja Yoga. Mm-hmm. What is the actual technical thing that she's presenting there?
Uh-huh. Sahaj means easy. That's what the term means. Like you'll have, if you have asans, so you'll have, let's say, the full asan, you know, and then you'll have a simpler form of that is something you can't get to. It's a preliminary step. It'll be called sahaj of that. You know, like it's let's see, what is it called? I can't remember the name. So.
It's used in the Chaitanya many times, the word sahaj.
Yeah, sahaj just means to
He
to
usually
help.
Did this. It's his common word.
Yeah, it just really? Means sahaj. It just means easy. Like that. So that's why they're called sahajiyas, because they've taken... So Sahaj Yoga, she's just performing some simple way of doing yoga that probably the mass can take part in,
yeah.
You know, like that. So Sahajiya comes from it's a mix from actually from Buddhism, Yeah, Sahajis are actually a mix of Vaishnavism and Buddhism. Like that, all the Sahaja, I mean, all the upper sampradayas are Vaishnavism mixed with something. Like the
so
Dadavesh, like we've heard of the whirling dervishes, we call them.
Yeah.
They're actually Muslim mixed with Islam mixed with Vaishnavism. Like that. So
but is there's an impersonal aspect to these?
There's something there. How much is there? But what they took from them was that easiness. So it seems that in the Buddhist thing, then there came up, because they've become mixed with Tantra. We're not dealing actually. Whatever's manifest today we know as Buddhism isn't the real Buddhism that Buddha taught. Because there's supposed to be no temples, no anything. You just wander and beg, and that's it. And discuss and meditate. That's it. You don't. And so all their ritual, all this has been added from Tantra and other things. So it seems that there's some aspect of it that there's an easier aspect. There's a very difficult path and there's an easy path. So it seems that that aspect from Buddhism they took, and then they just make the easy path. You just sit down and because they're meditation, right? The Buddhists are meditation. So without all the arduous things, then they just meditate on Radha and Krishna. So basically they've taken that aspect of the easy aspect of meditation from Buddhism and applied it in the Vaishnavism. So then they meditate on Radha and Krishna. That's their thing. You know, so I would say that aspect, whether it's impersonal, I don't think that's been there. But their method, their abhideya they've taken, not their prayojana, their goal. So then they take this thing as even in this material body, then I will meditate on Radha and Krishna, then I'm in the pastime doing service, like that. But you can only meditate like that when you do have a spiritual form. That's the meaning of Surup Siddhi. Surup Siddhi means it's the form you can use while you're still within this body. It's a very subtle thing. It means it is your spiritual form, but you're still dealing with it with a mind that still has the scent of the material conception. Like that. So it's a very subtle thing. When you get to the point of what's called Vastu Siddhi, then the mind and the devotion match the spiritual form, then it's complete. Otherwise, in Surup Siddhi, because it's not completely matched, you can't fall down. Therefore, it's said that someone, until they get to prema, they can fall. So even someone in bhava who has their spiritual form and can meditate and is in the pastimes and is being engaged, then they could fall like that. So until they get to Vastu Siddhi. So that's what's happening in the 10th canto, in when you see that the gopis, then the ones that couldn't go, it's because they didn't have the right attitude, like that. Their attitude, they were enjoying the facilities of the spiritual world. They were enjoying the pleasantries in the house, dealing with the children. You know, I mean, it's a distraction. You know, here it's an annoyance because you're dealing with material bodies and everything around you is material. So it carries the inherent disturbance of the material energy. But you could imagine being in your spiritual body in Gokul, which is spiritual. There is no inebrities there. Material inebrities don't exist, so it would be very nice. So if you still have a slight bit of the enjoying mood, you can get distracted. So that's what happened to those gopis. So then they didn't get to go. And then in that separation from Krishna, then they meditated upon him so much it burnt up that last little like fragrance of attachments, you know, material, like the enjoying spirit. Then, depending upon how complete it was, that's why I said they gave up their body, not their form that they were in. They gave up the mental body of enjoyer. That was removed. So then they were able to, some of them were able to go that night, you know, their obstacle was removed and they can go, and others had to wait for another night, depending upon how complete was that what's called, it's called technically called Purva Rag, or complete attachment. If they came to the point of Purva Rag, then they get to go. And if they didn't, then they had to wait.
You say in Goloka the gopis are
not in the Goloka, Gokul.
Oh, Gokul, okay.
See, this is sometimes also a mistake made by devotees when they discuss these things, mm-hmm. is that they take it that when you say the spiritual world, it means Goloka, okay. and the material world means here what we're in, you know, what we're seeing today. But Gokul is the spiritual world manifest in this plane. So it is under the, how do you say? It is present here by the tatastha potency. The tatastha shakti means where you can take spiritual and material and put them together in the same place at the same time, because the two have nothing to do with each other. So that's the potency of the tatastha shakti, is they can keep those two together. So it's the tatastha shakti that is able to keep our soul in this body. Otherwise, the two have nothing to do with each other. So it's the same that can keep Gokul and the material world in the same place at the same time. Therefore, the jiva, from that vantage point, can see the spiritual and the material. They can see both and all those things. They can see both like that. Therefore, when we talk about that's why you have to go to Gokul first, because you have to be completely squeaky clean before you can go to Golok. That's one aspect. Plus, then you have to have an identity, right? If you're in Goloka, suddenly show up there, and then the others will ask you, oh, who are you, where are you from, who are your parents, you know, cause and what are you going to say? Well, I don't
know. I'm from Choisy.
You know, so then, you know, they would say, oh, is that the other side of... The other side of Govardhan, where the tribals live, that place, Kalinda stuff. You know. So, does that make some sense? So, this many times is misunderstood, you know, like that. So that's.
You were mentioning about mixing of different. You mentioned the whirling dervishes and the Buddhists and all like that. We see sometimes, and this has also been a discussion in certain Pujari circles, about the mixing of certain South Indian puja traditions in with our Gaudiya Bengali puja traditions. One side of it is that, how is it we're doing this? The other side of it is that the majority of Lord Chaitanya's immediate followers were from South India. So could you speak on this point?
The thing is that the one thing is the ritual, the other is the flavor of the ritual. That's where the mistake is. The mistake is not... See, if we have our own ritual, because we're following our own particular lines, that mostly come more out of, like, Gotamiya Tantra, Ahirbhudnyaya, and Hayashirsha, like this, Pancharatras, Narada Pancharatra. So, these things, but we have our flavor in which we apply them. Because our flavor will tend more towards... The tantric aspect. The tantric aspect has this particular flavor. So it'll be a little bit more in that direction. But it still is unique to our line. So if it carries our line and it's appropriate, it can be used. But more, it's not, daily puja is not so important because we have our own tradition of that. Festivals, there's many things you can gain from there. Because I think that's what one of the things Lord Chaitanya took from Ramanuja. Like that. So festivals, but still it has to have our flavor. If it doesn't have our flavor, it doesn't fit very well. So you have to be able to translate it. You know, it would be just like you take something from another language and if you translate it, then it matches. You know. So therefore, you have to know what it is you're taking also. Why is it like that? What's being done? If you just take it because you saw it was nice, it may be something we don't do. You know, because there are our worship already has been cleaned of those elements that are going to be an obstacle to Raghunatha Sadhana, like that. So we can't add like the Kusa rings. That's one of the things that's against. That's one of the five items that you don't use in Raghunatha Sadhana.
Could you name the other four?
The Kusa rings also include the Kusa belt, the Brahmacharis. We use it in the ceremony, but we won't wear it like that. We use cloth like that. But the others, the Vedic, they would actually wear the grass belt like that. So the Kusa, let's see, Rukmini Puja, Dwarka Dhyanam.
Don't they use deer skin?
Mudras in the worship. We use mudras for purification, but when we offer the items, we don't use.
I mean, such as when an RT is done, you wouldn't use mudras.
No, but that's for purification. But you wouldn't show the article mudra to the deities and then offer it. You understand? In other words, we use the mudras in yoga, but not in Egypt.
Wow.
That's the point. So when you're purifying something, that's yoga. You're spiritualizing it. But there is an article, like for the flower. You know, there's one for the flower that you show the deity, like that. Then, after that, you pick it up and offer. That's Vaikuntha worship. So that we don't do, like that. But to purify, that the acharyas all give. But that's for purification. That's for bringing it up to the spiritual platform. But once it's on that, then we don't use them. And nyas on yourself, we don't use. We can use nyasas on the deities, but we don't do the nyas on yourself. So the kara nyas and anga nyasas, we don't do.
Why is that?
Because then the principle is then there's the fault of thinking that you are the mantra. Like that. And also it carries the thing, you're the mantra, but we're worshipping that mantra. That's the mediums of the mantra. So like that.
Maharaj, I've never understood why we changed the whole system of worship from what Prabhupada personally taught to Shivaji and she taught to everybody else in the movement. And at some point after Prabhupada left,
because he had asked that the Archanpadati be written and it be taken from Keshav Maharaj's based on that, so that it would include all the 16 items and all that. Because at that time, the 16 items in their full form wasn't given. So it was the start of it. So those things, that the essential points are there. Artik's done, offerings are done like this. But then how to more technically do it, that would be. Prabhupada started basically of like what is the home worship thing, but temple worship is on a more technical point.
So is it wrong to do it the way Prabhupada taught
us? No, but not at the expense to say that the Archanpadati is not the way Prabhupada wanted it. If you say that, well, Prabhupada taught this and this is new, that would be, to me, would be a wrong attitude. That we were taught like this and we do this in our home, that's fine. Or if we want to establish that system, but Prabhupada did want our temples to be able to run at a standard that others who are following Pancharatra would consider that we're on that standard. Therefore, he asked them to the Archanpadati was his desire. And he specifically said it should be based on Keshav Maharaj's presentation. That's why Jayatirtha was putting together that book, the original white book, though they didn't explain things properly.
There was a change after that.
Change after that means?
Well, the basic idea of offering the articles to Prabhupada.
That's by the grace of Gaurakeshava. And that's by others, the ineffectuality of the GBC to disseminate their own resolutions, because in 87 they discussed this point. It was pointed out what was the standard that is there. Gaurakeshava misunderstood what was the process that was being used, and because he was the minister of deity worship in Bhagavan's own, therefore, then he established in all the temples differently. He even misunderstands the Pancharatra thing, you know, bless his soul, but whatever.
So
he says that there's two systems. There's not two systems. There's only one system.
So what, you know, what is the correct thing? I mean, Prabhupada...
The correct thing is to see... But the devotees have to understand also what Prabhupada gave. This is the problem. It's because devotees misunderstood, so when they presented to Gaurakeshava, what they presented was Siddhantically wrong. So therefore, he changed it to try to make it more Siddhantically right, but he introduced the systems as he understood them from the South Indians. So what had happened was, is between the time when he did that in the 80s and when Prabhupada had given the process in the 70s, devotees had lost the understanding. So what changed is that the devotees themselves had forgotten why they were doing it. So what's happening is, if you ask most devotees today, when they offer the artik and they show the lamp to Prabhupada, they'll say they're worshipping Prabhupada. And And so then after that, then it goes to Lord Chaitanya. But then if you think about it siddhantically, how could you offer the remnants of Prabhupada with the same article to the next duty? Come down but not go up.
But is it remnants? I don't understand why I ever thought no, it was remnants. Prabhupada offers it to his guru. It's offered.
Yes,
to
but that's
Chaitanya
the point, but that was not explained to him. Because you're not worshipping Prabhupada, you're going through Prabhupada. So therefore, devotee is not understanding the depth of the meaning of the words, just use them loosely. So the point is you're going up, you're approaching the spiritual master, you can't worship directly Krishna. You can give it to him, he'll give it to the next, it'll go up and get to there. But you ask most pujaris around the movement, they won't say this. They
so
don't know this.
To do it that way. I guess
no, that is the only way it can be done. That is the pancharakic system.
So,
but you have to, what is needs to be maturely understood is Prabhupada is trying to get us to technically understand what it is that's going on. Means from you purifying the lamp and going through the spiritual master in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu up to Krishna, that part is called yoga. That's preliminary activities. When you get to Krishna, then you actually start the worship. That's where the artik starts. Then after you finish worshipping Krishna, then after that, then it's coming down. That's the concluding activities. So this is what the Archan Padavi is supposed to explain, which didn't get explained and devotees don't know. So there's probably most pujaris in the movement can't tell the difference between yoga and ija, and they mix it up and they make a real mishmash of the system.
We saw that's what Prabhupada, I mean, Prabhupada.
I know, I'm saying that, but that's you talking. But you go around and talk to all the pujaris in this movement, they don't say that. It's been lost.
So in other
you
words,
know what I'm saying is between whoever Prabhupada taught it to and the people who are today doing the puja, it's been lost because probably most of them looped. What I'm saying, you know what I'm saying? The pujari, where are those pujaris that Prabhupada taught in LA, in New York, in London? Where are they? They're not there. So then how do you expect it to go on? So what's happened is in that vacuum that came, they didn't understand. They were doing it but not understanding. Then Gaurakeshava comes along and says, hey, this is wrong. And so then, therefore, he put in how he understood the South Indian system. So he made a mistake also.
So if he's wrong, why don't we go back to, you know,
because it's not
seminars now I can teach them.
Going back, I didn't know that it was different. The GBC in 87 said that's the way the artik's supposed to be done. And if people aren't doing it, what can I say if they don't know how to follow the GBC or the GBC doesn't know how to disseminate their own knowledge? It's the GBC resolution that artiks are done by picking up the lamp, going through Prabhupada. The artik starts with Krishna, like this, and then it comes back down. So it looks the same, but you understand what you're doing, philosophically what's going on.
So the idea of going guru up or Krishna down are both correct, but one has to understand what is the procedure one is doing that with, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
correct?
It means the thing is, you have Purvanga karma. It means you have to do preliminary activities. You have to purify and you have to bring your consciousness to the spiritual standard. Then, once you do that, then you start worship. Right? And then after you've worshipped the Lord, then part of the worship is to worship his associates. Therefore, when you're showing the lamp to Tulsi and the devotees, that is because they are parts of the Lord and his associates. Then the artik is complete. So three different elements of the deity worship are happening all in that one offering of one article. But the devotees need to understand those three. That's what the Archan Padavi is supposed to explain. It's not supposed to change what they're doing. So the Archan Padavi explains it that way. But I would say is probably 99.9% of the pujaris don't read the book anyway. Like that. They all have it, but they don't read it. So that explanation is not there. And then you have, by word of mouth, what Gaurakeshava has said, that you can't offer the remnants, which is true. But, so therefore he says, you just pick up the lamp and start showing it to Krishna. But you can't do that either, according to Pancharatra. Because in Pancharatra, what you would do is you have a separate room on the side, where you'd go in, you'd offer your obeisances, you'd do your achman, you would worship guru, you'd do all the preliminary activities. Then you'd walk into the room where there'd only be a deity. There'd be nothing else there. And then you would worship. Like if you notice in the But in the deity, there's no place for anything else. There's the deity standing there, and that's it. That's all you see in the Pancharatra temple. Then they'll do that, and then the remnants will be given out. So they've done all three aspects, but they've done it all for the whole artik. They've done the preliminary activities. Then they do the whole artik on its own, like that. Well, we'll take each article and do all three on each one right after the other. That way then the focus stays. Because the other one, then that means you have to have someone more focused. They went in and did the preliminary activities and just did that. Then they remembered that they're worshipping the deity by the grace of their guru for their whole arti. Well, we have a little bit shorter memory. So, and the more simple way is just, you just take it in each article, you deal with it fully as it's being offered. So the same principle. That's why when devotees say, well, there's two systems. There's not two systems. There's only one system. But how you apply that system, you can get these two different ways. So what Gaurkeshava has given is not the system. And what many devotees figure they're doing is also not the system. So what Prabhupada had given when you pick up the lamp and you show it to Guru and that, you're not worshipping them. You're going through them. You're worshipping Krishna. Like that. And then the prasad is coming down through the parampara and Tulsi and the devotees. Like that. So that was the original thing. And that is the proper Pancharatric understanding. But it needs to be trained and told. This is what's going on here, this is what's here, this is what's here. Then you understand the three parts of it. But if you look at it, you only see one thing. So therefore it doesn't matter if you offer all the circles to Prabhupada and to Lord Caitanya and on the way up and on the way down. Those aren't, you can do it, not do it, how you want to time it and everything. You have to do it for Krishna. You want to do it for the others, nice, but if you want it, then you have to do it for Krishna. Like that. You know, so that's the principle. So you know what's what and what's where. But otherwise, most devotees, if they take anything and start showing circles, then immediately they're worshipping. Like that. That's just, you know, it's just the way it is. You know, it says worship is done in circles. Right? You know, I've even yeah. You know, it's just like anything. People take the lamp down to Prabhupada, they start showing it. So they do everything. Everything goes in. So you want to put flowers, you know, then they have to circle. You know, it's like,
what should it be? Though? I mean, they're describing seven circles. It used to be over the head through the conch. It changed it.
No, it's a standard, what Prajumna gave when Prabhupada had asked to go into that, what Prajumna gave in the beginning, in the 70s, is what is the Pancharatric thing, is that the full numbers is for the lamp, because out of the artik, the lamp is the central thing. It's the one that Krishna likes the most, like that. So then, of that, then, so it has the full thing of four to the feet, to the chest, and then there's two definitions. Some Paradis say three to the head, say one to the head. Prajumna gave one to the head, somehow or another, then it was chosen the three to the head, I'm not sure why. But
then seven around.
And then seven around the body. So then the principle is that it's not, you don't need to do that for anything else.
So when we start with Prabhupada, you just go once and possible.
Yeah, but generally for the spiritual master, there's something a little bit more shown than for the others. So generally you would pick it up, show Prabhupada that, a little bit more, because you're trying to focus. Then going through the rest of them, they can be one or even just wave. You don't even have to use circles. Whatever's convenient. Something that's pleasant and nice, like that. But on the deity, then that's there. But then the seven times around the body, you know, the incense can go like that. The flowers then are offered only the feet, so then you do the seven around the feet. The conch, the main thing is above the head. So you can either just show it just above the head or go around the whole body and then show above the head so that there's something. Because argya is sprinkled on the head. It's not a bath, it's an argya. So it's sprinkled on the head like that. What's his name? Sachinanda. Jai Sachinanda. He took it as a hand walk. Depending upon the devotees and rasa. Means the rest of this purport, then Prabhupada just talks about rasa.
is that the whole thing of what one is tasting is rasa. It means all the different branches of knowledge are there for tasting rasa. That's all. That's all there is in the world. Some may come to different conclusions, but there's nothing else other than rasa anywhere in the cosmic creation. There's a taste, something that one is tasting between two living entities. There can be more, but at least two. But the thing is that is misdirected. It's supposed to be between the jiva and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, favorably in devotional activities. That's how its rasa is supposed to be applied. Then you get these five main rasas, along with the seven secondary rasas. Right? But when it comes into the material world, then we see people are not interested in spiritual rasa, necessarily. They're interested in rasa. Right? When the living entity decided that he wanted to take the position of God, he was not complaining about the rasa that God was tasting. He was not complaining about the facilities that God was enjoying. He was not complaining about the place where God was enjoying those facilities and the relationships with the devotees. He was not complaining at that time about the form of the Lord, about the form of the devotees, or the form of themselves. Right? On the various tastes that are being tasted. You understand that? But they just wanted to cut God out of the picture and wanted to take God's place. Therefore, the material world is just a reflection of the spiritual world. Right? That's why. Because no one was complaining. They liked all the five rasas. They liked all the different activities. They liked all those things. But they just thought, why Krishna should enjoy? Why not me? Therefore, the material world, if it's run according to the shastras and all that, we see that it looks almost like the spiritual realm. People dress, they talk, they do all the activities of the spiritual realm. Only, they're still misdirected because they don't establish one's relationship with the Lord. So then Bhagavatam is here to correct that. One is performing one's activities according to the shastra, but one is not doing it to please the Lord. So now here, that is all being corrected. Any activity of the world is being corrected here by the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, one knows how to perform all one's different duties within the Varnashram system. One knows how to deal with the knowledge of the world so that one can establish oneself in relationship with the Lord. Right? So that bridge, how to cross, that's the essential. So here, this is being given by Vyasadeva in this verse. By the submissive hearing and association of devotees, then you're going to cross. Otherwise, you're not going to cross. It won't happen. It just doesn't happen. So that's given here. So these rasas are there. Now in the material world, then, we still have living entity to living entity. On the higher platforms, the five rasas, then performed in their proper, according to the scriptures, or according to the proper way the rasa should manifest, then you end up with all these five rasas in the material world. You end up with, very pious, friendship relationship, or servitorship, or conjugal, or parental. All these things you end up with, like that. If one follows very properly, in a pious way. One is not pious, then it's there to some degree, but not much. It's not tasted all the time. Like we see a very pious mother, who was very nicely trained, then at all times she's thinking of the benefit of the children, or anyone who is kind of like a dependent, or anyone who just happens to walk into the sphere of her world that she can grab and sit down and feed them and complain that they're not dressing properly and they're not taking care of themselves and this and that. And they can enjoy this rasa 24 hours a day, like that. But if we drop down from that, then we see So this is still from living entity to living entity, but specifically mind to mind. Right? The emotional platform of the mind to the other person's emotional platform, the mind. That's really what's happening. On the transcendental platform, it's soul to God, or soul to soul, like that. So it's on the platform Satchidananda. But when we come into material rasa, which is the reflection, perverted reflection, it's perverted because now you're dealing from mind to mind. The soul is attached, so it's involved, but actually the interaction is not happening with the soul. It's happening with the mind to mind. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita points out that it's all just the modes of nature working. But the soul, because of their attachment to the mind and the particular desires, then as they unfold, then they become happy or unhappy due to all this, right? So this is happening. Then, how do you say? Yeah. Then we come down to the third level of rasa, the partiva rasa, which is the earthly rasa, means of the material elements, means material element, meaning the panchabhuta, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and the senses coming in contact with each other. It's like the tongue and something and a rasgula, like that. So you still have rasa there. You have the taste, has the ability to taste the rasa of the rasgula. So the rasgula is then appreciated by the tongue. So there's a rasa there between the two of them. And because the living entity is attached to the senses, attached to the body, therefore then they think that they are involved in it. But it's not. It's just the tongue, and which is material, and then another aspect of material nature, which is a rasgula. And that is what is the rasas happening between. So this is what's going on in the material world. Either the mind is meeting mind, or the senses are meeting senses, like that, or a combination of them. But that's what's happening in the material world. Therefore, it's perverted. Even though it's very pious, it looks very, very nice, it's perverted. Now, when you get a perverted, then you get sinful activities, like that. Then you get, that then becomes very terrible. So most will consider that is impious, and the other is pious. That's not perverted. But it's just a double perversion. The real unperverted is pure devotional service, is on the transcendental platform. So then, this is then explained here. Right? And Prabhupada then points out here, these Shruti mantras indicate that every living being has its constitutional position, which is endowed with a particular type of rasa to be exchanged with the personality of Godhead. In the liberated condition only, this primary rasa is experienced in full. In the material existence, the rasa is experienced in the perverted form, which is temporary. And thus, the rasas of the material world are exhibited in the material form of raudra, anger, and so on. It means all the 12 rasas. So in the spiritual world, then they're experienced fully, because here you are going from transcendental living entity to the transcendental Lord, in between the two of them. In the material world, it's experienced in part, and then only in the perverted form, because the Lord is not involved in this. It's the minds or the senses, right? So therefore, the living entity has its constitutional position. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is to teach us how to again reestablish that constitutional position, that rasa on that constitutional position. That is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is for. So if we see this, and this is actually what we want, we don't want anything else other than to reestablish our relationship with the Lord, reawaken our relationship with the Lord, then we take this very seriously, how the Bhagavatam points out that all religious activities that have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness are thrown out. All branches of knowledge that have nothing to do, or aspects of knowledge have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, are thrown out. Because those branches of knowledge, if followed according to the proper, the the Vedic standard, they will establish very nice relationships on the material platform and very nice sense gratification on the material platform. Very wonderful economic development. All these things will be there very nicely. Or also very nicely, you know, removing us from that moksha. That'll do it first class, right? There's no other system that can do it. But our goal is not to stay in the material world and go through this cycle of birth and death, or just the cycle of going in cycle of consciousness, going from anamoy up to the mundane anandamoy on the, you know, on in Brahman realization, and then back down like this. Either of these, we're not interested. Therefore, we'll look at all of our activities and see how does it relate to Krishna, how to engage it in the Lord's service. Then it becomes very nice. Otherwise, then it's useless. Yeah. Here. Then, whether it's practical for everybody, because some may doubt, was the Bhagavatam practical in this age? So here it mentions, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are narrated, and the narration is systematically depicted by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Thus, the subject matter is appealing to all classes of persons, including those who seek liberation, and those who seek to become one with the Supreme Whole. So, means everything is nicely given, that whatever you want, it is there. But the devotees, the from performing devotional activity, means you're engaging the material energy in the Lord's service. Right? So that's called karma yoga. From doing that, some result will come, right? Every action gives a reaction. Some result will come. But, so, therefore, all economic development is there. All sense gratification is there. But the devotee's not interested for themselves. They're only interested for the Lord. And then, by performing these activities, your religious activities, in a mood of detachment, all knowledge is gained. So one can distinguish between the matter and spirit. But it only brings one only to the material, to the platform of the the impersonal understanding. So then by seeing that knowledge only in relationship to Krishna, taking it a step further, then it also becomes devotional service. And it takes us out of the material world. So all benefits, material benefits, of karma and jnana are automatically there for the devotee. But the devotee is not interested in them. The devotee wants devotional service. But in the spiritual world, they perform activity for the Lord. Right? That is, it's not something, they perform activity for the Lord. So we perform devotional activities. And they will automatically give results. We don't even have to think about that. It just happens. That's the arrangement of the Lord. And so, but we are not interested in those results for ourselves. We are only interested in those in pleasing the Lord. Then those activities become spiritual and they free us from this material nature. So it's not that material activity has to be given up. You can't give it up anyway. You have a material body, you cannot give up material activity. You will breathe. You will, move, you will generally eat, you will interact with others. You know, the body is interacting with the elements around it. When the sun's out, then the body works in one way. Sun's not out, it works in another way. It's just going to happen. It's not a matter of choice. But it's a matter of we can choose what activities we want to do and how we want to do them so that we please the Lord. So we can see the activities of karma connected with the Lord. And the knowledge, that knowledge which has relevance to understanding the Lord, our position with the Lord, our service in relationship to the Lord, that we perform. And all other branches that are not. There's unlimited knowledge in this material world. And one can go on unlimitedly trying to learn it. But it still gives no satisfaction. Like that. Therefore, only what is in connection with the Lord we are interested. In the rest, we're not interested. Okay, so this then is basically the what do you call it? These verses, these three, the invocation of Vyasadeva. So we can see it establishes the whole basis of our whole Krishna consciousness movement and our whole philosophy, how we deal with everything, how we come to this understanding, you know, by submissive hearing, by performing activities where they're not materially motivated, by giving up, enviousness, like this. Respecting the Lord, wanting to know the Lord, and wanting to establish relationship with the Lord. So by hearing the Bhagavatam in the association of devotees, then this is what we can gain. Any questions on this?
Yeah. What you're saying about the nature of reading around the material world, whether it's transcendental or class in class, seems like it's a very subtle thing. It depends on how we perceive and conceive things.
Yes.
And it reminded me of a quote from Bhagavad Gita when Prabhupada says that Maya is forgetfulness of the personality of the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
It's personality aspect.
What time is it, Cor?
8:30.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's the whole thing is forgetting. Because, see, even though it's not technically Maya, the impersonal realization or the Paramatma realization, but because the concept of it stems from material consciousness, therefore, even that still has an aspect of illusion to it. Because one is illusion that one thinks it's complete when it's not. They're part of the Lord, so that way they're transcendental. The activities that one is performing in their own way are transcendental. The sadhana, the understandings, but because it's not complete, there's still some aspect of illusion. There's still some aspects of illusion. Though it doesn't carry, it may be devoid of the three modes. But its purpose for desiring it is not free from the modes. Right? Means one wants liberation or one wants the Paramatma realization. Means to merge in the existence of the Lord. Like this. Because of frustration with the material world. Means we wanted to enjoy the material world. We could not enjoy the material world. So we see it as a place of misery. And so naturally, the impersonal concept is something I don't like. I mean, if I don't like the result of an activity, I don't do the activity. That's the whole essence of the impersonal philosophy. I don't like the result of karma because it's frustrating. In the beginning, I was very enthusiastic because I thought this was going to give me great happiness and satisfaction. I did it nicely, I got the results, I was still frustrated and unhappy. Like this. So therefore the Vedic literatures, the Karmakanda section, they're just, you know, basically giving us it is flowery language. And so I reject that, knowing that it is the happiness in the material world is illusory, and I reject that and give that up. But its whole motive is I wanted to enjoy it and I couldn't. Right? Because if actually the motive was you saw the material happiness and saw this is ridiculous and you want to stick to the spiritual happiness, then after the birth, during the birth of Lord Brahma, we would have left. But we didn't. That means we saw here is something to enjoy. So we entered the material world. So we're here. So that is, yeah. So this material, that material knowledge, how you say? Material knowledge? Yeah. So its motive is not pure. Like that, when one is upset because one didn't get to enjoy what one wanted. Like that. So that is the motivation for getting out of the material world. It's not positive. it's like looking in the material world, this is terrible, then I propel myself towards the Brahman. You know? And then the attractive thing of the Brahman, what is attractive about the Brahman? There's no material pain. Like that. No material pain. I know, you know, I have knowledge, and there's no material reactions from karma. So it's still based on the material world, but just in the negative. Right? See, so the whole process, the whole concept is still within the material realm. You know, it's like all-inclusive. I don't know, there's a term for this, where something is like, it's complete, and it's got its own, like, scene, self-contained. Yeah, so it's like the material world, the whole, the world and a concept is still materially contained. I mean, what did I just say? Self-contained. So it's though the Brahman is part of the spiritual realm. Those living entities that project themselves from here into the Brahman, they're going there actually based on not full understanding. Therefore, what they're dealing with transcendental subject and transcendental substance, but because their understanding of and their approach to it is not complete, or it has its material underlying undercurrents. Therefore, though they're counted as transcendentalists, we can't ultimately count them as transcendentalists because it's temporary. They will temporary, and only material things are temporary. So the Brahman itself is transcendental, the soul itself is transcendental, but the soul being situated in the Brahman, that is not actually a transcendental concept. It's a material concept. Therefore, it doesn't work. One has to, again, come back to the material world. So therefore, this gives a lot of trouble because the living entity gets stuck in these two consciousness. I perform the activity because I want the fruit, or because I don't want the fruit, I'm not performing the activity. And so both of these mentalities are against devotional service. Because devotional service is, I perform the activity without the desire for the fruit. And that fruit is for Krishna. That's devotional service. But when we perform the activities of devotional service, have the knowledge of devotional service, and don't want to include Krishna in the whole process, then the performance of the activity, that then branches off and becomes the manifests as the whole karmakanda, or the whole process of fruitive activities. And the whole aspect of knowledge, then that branches off for the mundaner into the impersonal concept. But its actual purpose is for the living entity to free himself from the material world. That's what it's for. But the living entity, all he knows is the material world, so he either knows karma or he knows jnana. Right? Oh, wow. When these two are synthesized, when the two are synthesized together, when you have karma and jnana together being used in devotional service, cooperatively, right? We perform the activity in knowledge, in devotion. That gets us out of the material world, because then we situate ourselves on the platform of soul or prakriti. Right? Because both knowledge and activities are working together at the same time. Right? While in the material consciousness, we're either into karma or into jnana and not into both. We can't see how they work together. So this is the mundane, masculine mentality. Is they can work one or the other. That's the way their brain works, right? They can work in emotion, they can work in logic. But they don't work in both at once. Right? So in consciousness, therefore, and we see the feminine is they work in material feminine, they work in both at once. Right? Emotions are there and the logic is there simultaneously. It's just the way the brain is wired. Right? So we see, therefore, every living entity in the material world, in material consciousness, is male. Because it's karma. I do the activity because I will get the result. Or I reject the activity because I don't want the result. Right? So only when they can give up this Purusha Bhav and accept themselves as a servant of the Lord, then by synthesizing these and doing it for the Lord, then they get themselves out of there. Because then they actually take up their actual position. But as long as they're in the male mentality, they won't get themselves out of the material world. That was fun. So that is the thing. So these principles, they work on all levels. Like that. Is that answering? Okay. Something else? You had something?
Okay, just to go to before, I just was saying that the devotional service is that we take interrupted with it because it doesn't have anything to do with material activities. So, I remember that some of the Pancharatic books says that there's a difference, but there are different systems of worship, but Pancharatic is distinguished by that. It's only the result of worship is through devotional service or liberation by some other process, like Vedic processes. They give different foods. You can get like by performing Vedic rituals, you may get liberation, and also you can get material foods. But this is for the cantina, then Jesus has only one focus, which is liberational service.
Yeah, very nice. He was saying that in the Pancharatra itself, it's stated that the difference between the Pancharatra as a system of worship or religion and the Vedic systems is that the Pancharatra will only give you the fruit of love of God. While the Vedic systems, you can get that if that you know what to look for, but otherwise they can also give you the fruits of karma or fruits of jnana, like that. But the Pancharatra is the rituals of the Vedic literature devoid of karma and jnana. Like that. So that it's only, therefore the Pancharatra is the perfect system of worship for this age. Like that. Because it complements the Sankirtan movement. Anything else? Yeah. Okay, so end here. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.